from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the Good Atheist Podcast. My name is Jacob Fortan. Today on the show, I have another guest. His name is Dion Barnard. He has a podcast that he just started. And you know, there's been a phase, everybody knows this, I've been doing more interviews, and there's a part of you as a podcast promoter that thinks, I'm going to interview famous people because it's going to grow my numbers. And while that's a good business strategy, I don't think it does much to, you know, notify people of the stuff that they might not be aware of. And I think that's still something that the Good Atheist is all about. And today, this is why I have my guest on, because Dion is, you know, he started his own podcast. He's at now episode, what's your episode number?
Wow. I don't mean
28?
Yeah, it's about 28. In fact, I have two in the bag, so that's why it's difficult. I'm planning to upload this weekend. So, yeah, probably more like 31 at the moment.
You know, okay, here's what's funny. I'm in the process of working on my own best of. So I'm going back and I'm listening to the early parts of my show. And I remember, too, in the early shows, I couldn't even fucking tell you what episode number it was.
Absolutely. I'm very much to that place.
Well, the first thing I wanted to do, one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on the show is because I'm kind of curious myself of your story. I was doing some background research a little bit, and it turned out that you had been religious in the past. So this is a way that you and I are very different in terms of our experience. And I was kind of curious of what sort of like, say, a person who's got similar skills, similar talents, a similar person living in a different environment, but under different circumstances. So tell me, what is your story?
Yeah, I'll try and just really give you the nutshell version, but left school in 1990 and went straight into a missionary group called the Covenant Players, based out of the United States. I was in the South African sort of chapter of it. And we traveled around the world effectively. At that time, I was with them for 5 years, went around the world to about 22 countries doing drama, effectively bare stage drama. We'd stand on the streets and do plays.
Oh, I think I've seen people sort of like filming themselves do that. Were you really the corny kind of plays?
Yeah, pretty corny. Pretty corny. I you know, a lot of what I tell you now, I'm fairly embarrassed about.
Well, so, I'm sorry to put you in that position, but I got to tell you something. No, I mean, like, that's a natural part of that whole catharsis. Like, oh, God, absolutely. I'm so embarrassed. I went around doing these horrible... Were you doing the passion plays? Is that what you were doing?
No. All these plays, we had a repertoire of about 3,000 plays. They were all written by a guy called Chuck Tanner in the States.
Chuck Tanner? It's his deal.
Well, he was a friend of oh, man, what was the guy who wrote Charlie Brown and Peanuts, you know?
Charles
Yeah,
Schultz
that's
or...
it. That's it. He was sort of a colleague there. And anyway, this guy started this group, Covenant Players, and the idea was to spread, you know, the word of God to the world through the not-in-your-face medium of drama, the unthreatening medium of drama. So
he was going to use a really old-school method, be like, hey, the Greeks were all about this. Let's do
Yeah, absolutely. Now, look, in school, I was very much a dramatist, still am. I do enjoy the theater. I do enjoy the stage. I had a bit of a religious bent, was brought up in a religious home. So it sort of came together for me. I kind of had this glamorous idea of what being a missionary was. It was a bit Indiana Jones, you know. And it in fact, turned out to be very Indiana Jones. I literally walked through East Africa for a year with a backpack on my back doing drama in the middle of nowhere. So it was very Indiana Jones. It was actually quite thrilling. In fact, one of my co-hosts, Brian, who's been with me since the beginning of our show, he was with me in Covenant Players, which is quite incredible. So we knew each other 20 years ago as evangelical missionaries, both got deconverted without knowing about each other's stories, and then met each other 20 years later, both atheist skeptics, you know. So that was incredible.
Well, I think the embarrassment probably some of these plays really was the catharsis. Yeah.
Yeah.
They sound strange, but at least what your audience was, were they enthralled at least, like from the performance?
Oh, they were. It's not that we weren't good at what we did.
Right.
We just weren't aiming our dramas at. I mean, I don't even think we really understood what an academic or an intellectual sort of audience was. You know, we were preaching to the masses, and it's really not difficult to do that.
What about the style of the message, though? Was it kind of like were you the happy go lucky kind? Your Jesus loves you, or were you more like you're going to burn in hell?
Well, a bit of both.
Really? Oh, okay, a mix.
the charismatic flow in the world is really a bit of both. You start by telling people they're going to hell, and when they come to you for relief from that burden, then you tell them how much God loves them. It's all a bit of a mindfuck. But that's what we did. Did this all around the world, came back to South Africa, and went into the ministry, into church ministry, became a pastor, and did that for a few years. And it was kind of during that phase that my deconversion started, that the whole thing started to erode. And I would say the first part of the erosion was just my uncomfortableness with some of the stuff we were preaching, some of the stuff I'd become familiar with preaching. You know, in the evangelical churches, and it's the same in the States, you start the sermon with like a 5-minute tithing message where, you know, everybody's got to give their money to the church, and you come up with the most insanely out of context pieces of scripture to back up your bullshit and get people to throw money at you. And I always felt a bit uncomfortable with that as a concept. I eventually stopped tithing myself, and just other things started to erode. And with that sort of level of frustration, my preaching started to change. I people started to realize that I wasn't quite on the straight and narrow. Started reading Greek philosophers like Plato, and that, of course, just really sped the whole snowball up.
Pagan philosophers, jeez. What were you thinking?
So, well, exactly. Well, the irony is, we now have a society based on fucking pagan philosophers and a bit of Roman philosophy thrown in there. But effectively, it just came apart. I just remember standing in front of a group of people one day, staring at them and realizing I was a complete hypocrite. I couldn't do this anymore. I didn't actually believe any of it, you know. I walked away from the church to start with. Got a lot of flack for that. Like, why aren't you in the church, you know? The church is a difficult thing to leave. You need to understand that. And then when I finally sort of woke up one day, probably about 5 years ago, and said, it was after reading Richard Dawkins' The God Delusion. I sort of closed the book at the end of it and said, I'm a fucking atheist. That's what I am. I'm an atheist. Sort of, it was just an absolute revelation. It was just fantastic. I stood up and went to my lady, Heather, said, I'm an atheist. That's what I am. That's what this thing that I'm feeling like is. And immediately took all the skills of my churchiness and went out and started building rational groups to replace the community that I no longer had. I mean, I literally lost thousands of friends, and that to this day still rant and rave on Facebook and such like. So started a small group called Rumble in the Pub, which is a kind of philosophical gathering we do every couple of weeks. We now have one going on in Sweden. We have a couple here in South Africa, and joined up with the skeptical movement and just got back into science, which has always been a passion of mine. And we're 5 years down the line. I have a whole new community. Started a podcast a couple of years back. It's not been as disciplined as yours has been. We sort of stop and start and stop and start. But
those are the early phases of podcasting. Look, I feel I'm looking at this, and I swear to you, you came at just the most opportune time to be on the show. I'm telling you, because as I'm working on this best of, just listening to yours and having listened to mine, and you know what, I go back and I listen to those early shows. I'm not a happy man listening to my early shows, to be quite truthful with you, because, as everybody knows, I am critical as I'm the most critical human being on this fucking planet.
Yeah, I've heard your shows. I want to climb through the mic and just give you a slap across the head. I have to tell you, just like, cheer up, dude.
It's fine though. I mean, it's a power. It is definitely a power. You draw
That's
from
your
that
superpower,
power.
Yeah?
It is my superpower. Yeah, Mr. Supercritical and devastatingly critical. But that's always how I was as a human being. That's why I was never really attached to this whole religious idea. How could they attach me? I was criticizing everything from the get-go. I was criticizing my parents having a curfew. And the arguments were good enough that it was just the do it because I say so. And yeah, that was not acceptable. Now, and you know what that created? That created a problem with authority. Jeez, eh? You know what I am? I am just kind of like a common story that's probably shared with, what, how many millions of human beings? Don't feel like an individual. The internet teaches you a hard lesson. Everybody's like you.
Yeah.
Well, think about your friend, right? Just a completely different experience. But I feel like to some degree, when we're just given information, just when we just climb on the internet and we begin the process of learning how to filter out noise.
Educate
ourselves.
Absolutely.
What the fuck is going? What else is going to happen but this atheism shit, right?
No, absolutely. It's an absolutely inevitable end. Just open people to, well, just to what's out there. And even if they don't have a great filter, just the amount of doubt that you start to have when you just put all the facts together. It's just incredible. I mean, Brian, my co-host, he has exactly the same story. We were just amazed. I was so amazed. I actually left South Africa and flew over there to go and have a 2-week chat with him. I mean, we were just so bewildered by this journey we'd been on, you know. And that's why we started the podcast. We just sort of wanted a place where we could connect every week and just rant a little bit, you know, get rid of some of our emotions and embarrassment and fucking madness about the amount of wasted years. I mean, we know it's all school fees, but in a way, just all the fucking sex we never had. I mean, you spend half your time trying not to masturbate.
The one thing I thought was a little bit unusual about your situation too is that the part of the world that you live in is at least speaking to a person just to, you know, I'm a Canadian, so we have it pretty sweet up here. And the travels that you've had, the stories that I've been hearing, they terrify me. They terrify me as a human being. I don't think I could handle these kinds of situations. I listen to stories about having to go through a Nigerian airport.
Yep.
And I'm just sort of like, I don't ever want to go there. You can't put a gun to my head. You successfully managed to convince me never to travel to these places.
Yeah, I'm doing it all the time. Although I must say, I was listening to a couple of your podcasts that you did in very shady sort of internet conditions out in where the hell were
the
you?
Dominican
South America
Republic,
or somewhere.
The Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
Oh, but that is – I was in tourist town. I was – you know what I called the place where we lived in? White people camp. That's because you would be – I'd be sitting by the beach and there'd be just a bunch of friends and they'd all be white people, right? Because they're the only ones that could afford that section of the beach.
Yeah.
And they'd be walking by and they're like, hey, what are you doing? Have a barbecue. Ooh, the third world. The only time I would experience this is when I would have rides. We'd take Jeep rides out into the wilderness and it was like Jurassic Park. I couldn't get it out of my fucking head. It's like, na-na-na-na. Really, honestly, Jurassic Park all over the place. And then occasionally you see a shack made out of the crappiest wood. But what is right beside that shack but a nice Jeep? And you're just kind of like, I want to go inside that shack and I want to slap the people in the face and be like, you've got a wrong priority, sir.
Yeah.
Wrong priority.
Yeah. Well, okay, then you're right. You wouldn't deal with Nigeria well at all.
I didn't go to a place where... You know, the corruption there was in the style that if you were driving without your helmet, you could just give the cops $500 or 500 pesos and they would leave you alone. And you know what? To some degree, that's the level of corruption that I'm comfortable with. I'm not comfortable with the level of corruption that you were talking about on your show.
Yeah, no, but Nigeria is a special place. I mean, it really is unique in the world, short of maybe Colombia and Kazakhstan. There are very few places with that level of corruption, you know.
Well, what was your purpose of going there? What is it that you do for a living now, really?
I tell you, what's quite interesting about what I do for a living is that I've literally converted my ministry skills into corporate skills. That's what I've done. So I said, what is my superpower? And and mine is not criticism like yours is. Mine, right. Mine happens to be standing in front of thousands of people. That's what I'm good at, and I have an enormous amount of enthusiasm and optimism. So I just took all that, and I said, let's see if anybody wants to buy that. And I started a business from nothing, and now train all over the world. Literally, I go into corporates, banks, oil companies, whatever they may be, and I do team building, I do customer service training, I do motivational, you know, mind shifting, paradigm shifting stuff, help people think differently about what they're doing. I'm involved in all sorts of projects, and effectively, that's what I do. I speak to people.
Oh, so you similarly to me have one of what we call a weird ass fucking job. That's what you have.
Yep.
Yeah, a weird ass fucking job. Yeah, all right, welcome to the new world of weird ass jobs.
Well, I tell you what, a few months ago I joined up with the Clergy Project.
Oh yeah, well I had Jerry DeWitt on the show while ago. Yeah,
exactly.
So he was heavily involved there, and he's similar. He's in a similar situation where he has all these pastoral skills and just realize, well, what do we do with this guy now? He's got all these real skills that exist and are necessary. And it's nice to talk to someone who's actually able to translate these skills into something that really can sustain someone. Because I feel like this is a huge issue for most people who worry about leaving the ministry.
Well, that's exactly my point. Exactly my point. Having spoken to him and having just read some of the testimonials on that website of just these hundreds and hundreds of people in ministry that are still in fucking ministry. I mean, that just kills me. Just kills me that you could possibly like sell your – I don't know. To me, it's like selling yourself short, you know. Just but I understand. I understand what it's like. You're terrified. You it's all you know. It's the only validation you have, and to leave it would be like – committing suicide. It would be like going into a big dark space and dying. And that's what it feels like. But if you don't do it, you die anyway. You die in the church. So I realized that my story is a bit different in that I did do that. I just jumped off the cliff and fucking said, let's do it. And it's working, and I'm making money, and I'm supporting my family and so forth. And it's all good.
I have an analogy here that I'm not sure that everybody would be comfortable with, but I'm going to put this forward to you. And maybe you'll run with it, maybe you won't, because I think that your particular kind of transition to atheism resembles that of a butterfly. Yeah, pretty much. Because in a sense, you change so much of who you are, right? You go from being this larva that's just gobbling up all of this nonsense, all of this just matter that you're being fed. And then while you're in that cocoon phase where you can actually filter out through all that information and think for yourself as the beginnings of an adult, by the time you emerge, you're so different that everybody else doesn't recognize you. And not everyone goes through that process. Not everyone turns into a beautiful motherfucking thought butterfly. So that's our symbol, a butterfly. How about that?
That's right.
Yeah?
That's right. Well, it shows like yours and shows like – it's the reason I do the show. They are often after our show, I go, are we done? Have we spoken this thing out? Have we ranted enough? Can we turn off – can we push the stop button, put all our shows on a disc and put it in a cupboard somewhere? Can we do that? And we never do, because Brian and myself both just have this heart that there are humans out there sitting on the fence that, unlike you, did grow up in a religious situation, don't know how to get out of it, and just need to know that there are other people that have done it, that there are other people that are living a happy, fucking meaningful, successful life with purpose and friends and fucking communities and lots of sex, and it's just awesome, and it's all happening for them, and they don't have to be scared of making that transition. You know what I mean?
We will have to be honest with them, because the truth is that it's not the aftermath of it that they should be scared of, but the process itself, it's hard and terrifying. It's hard and terrifying because one way, you do not know how people are going to react. And there's different stories, like one of my interviews from Quiet Company, the band Quiet Company, his parents, even though they still believe, they're still supportive, and it's like, still fucking Leave It to Beaver, right? He's got to Leave It to Beaver home. But on the flip side, I mean, how many other people, even listening to this show, listening to your show, or in a situation where they know that if they just talk to their parents about it, that's it. It is over. You can forget about having a relationship with that part of your family ever again.
Yeah.
And you know, to undermine that and tell a person, well, you can still have a happy life without it, could sound like a pretty fucking hollow message, especially if by the end of it, you're like, well, you know, we're still at the very beginnings of trying to do outreach where, you know, you've got your meetup that you got kicking, but you know the struggles of being able to get people to go from online, the internet, to fucking in person. This is a tough transition. And we're still so much online, still so much there. So that's a significant challenge. Have you imagined ways to kind of get over this challenge?
Well, I tell you what, that just feeds back into my superpower again. You know, I mean, one of the things I'm absolutely passionate about is spending as little time as possible on the internet and as much time as possible with real people. And the moment I realized I was an atheist, I mean, literally like 3 days later, I created a logo, stuck it on the internet, said, Rumble in the Pub, we'll be there this Tuesday at this address, meet us there if you're interested. And then Heather and I went and sat in the pub and had a beer. And five people arrived. And now we have, you know, 70 people involved in that community, and we have overseas thing of it, and it's fantastic. And really all it takes is someone to just take a deep breath and do something. That's what it takes.
When you're dealing with establishing a scene with people, right, there's a moment, a kind of, it's hard to determine at what exactly size a group is, where all of a sudden all of the talk that everybody has turns into almost like a buzz, like almost like a beehive, where nothing is differentiable, but everything kind of sounds like people talking and communicating. And just that feeling itself, I think, is sort of like that secret feeling that everybody wants, but they don't really realize that that's what they need.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, I get you completely. Yeah, I think we hit that after a couple of months of meeting. You know, just the sense of community has kicked in. And anyone who's been to church, anyone who's depended on church for that buzz you're describing now, understands exactly what you're talking about. That thing can happen without church. And, you know, it's the flag I fly all over the place. Whether it's a skeptic meeting or a bloody science meeting or a rumble in the pub or whatever sort of way you want to do it, I am not convinced that it's difficult to get people together. I'm not convinced at all. I think people want to get together and they just need someone to give them an excuse.
Someone to kick them in the ass?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's tough, you know? That's probably why your job is so valuable, because you know what, here's the truth. You and I are polar opposites in certain ways. I am more of an online presence, but I cannot do the whole kicking people's asses and get them to do anything. I don't have that power. It's amazing. I have a big reach, but when it comes, push comes to shove, very difficult I don't get what it is. Maybe there's some part of your power that's the butt kicking thing that I need to understand. What's the tweak? How you do it?
I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe there's a bit of a butt kicking part. Look, anywhere I go, groups start. So that's what I do. So maybe that is the difference between us. I start groups wherever I go. You've got away with words on the internet. You know, maybe that's the difference.
Well, are you an encouraging kind of person? Do you give compliments easily?
Yes, I do.
That's what's really different.
The moment you said we're polar opposites, I thought I'm a huge superhero fan. I thought of Superman and Batman, and I can see that you have this kind of cynical, look for the problem kind of attitude about life, which as you say, can be immensely powerful when used in the right way. That's not me at all. I look for the opportunity in everything, and look for the happiness in everything. Look for a way to make people smile in all things. You know, that would certainly be my way of doing things.
Well, I certainly don't want to give the impression that I'm only a negative person.
Well, I wouldn't be talking to you if you were.
No, obviously not. And you know, here's my saving grace, at least for me, is that I take all of those Lex Lutherian, because I think I'm a good Lex Luthor, is basically what
it sounds like it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm the sort of when I watch the Smallville, I identify with that guy, one, because he's balding, and two, because I'm like, I'd be in a similar situation. But the difference is, see, with a guy like Lex Luthor is that he's accustomed to wealth, and it makes him less empathetic. I have too much empathy. I'm a big crybaby. That's what makes me un-Lutherian. That's what makes me sort of like a nice guy. I mean, like, I'm criticizing people, but I really only have everyone's best interest in mind when I say it. And that's the problem, yeah, sure. though, because no one really wants to hear the things that have their best interest in mind, right?
It's a fascinating philosophy. I can't say that it's one that I use.
There is a comic book that I have in the works where I try to take that part of my personality and describe it in a comic book sense. It's the thing I'm going to do after the book, but you know, the book is all consuming, right? What am I supposed to do with this fucking Bible Stories book but write it? But after that, after I've finished drawing my fucking ass off, my hope is by the time I'm able to do the graphic novel, I can do this really fun kind of almost tribute to the kind of 60s Spider-Man look of me. But the whole thing that I have, the superpower, is that ultimately when you criticize a part of a person, you'll notice, for instance, that if you were to tell something to a person what you think is innocuous, but they overreact, you know that there's something about what it is that you're saying, right? It's something that gets to them. And the truth is that nobody really is aware of it when it happens. They'll overreact and be completely unaware and think they're actually being reasonable when they're not. And this, that ultimately is the kind, everyone's fundamental flaw. That is the one thing that you can exploit and just basically, without a person knowing, expose everything about them. And in a sense, some people, they do need this. But how you exploit that power is a fragile thing, right? The temptation is always there Absolutely. To be like, I'm going to obliterate this foundation of what you have. I'm doing you a favor. And it's like putting a whisper in someone's mind that eats away at them without them knowing.
It's not unlike prophecy in the church, what you're describing, though. Same mechanic. The whole thing of bringing people in front of you, and you have this power. You know that whatever comes out of your mouth, they're going to take to heart. And you can swing them. You can swing them to go and do better and kind of do something with their lives, or you can break them down. You know, that's the power you have. That's the power of words. I just hope that in your comic, you will have a Green Lantern ass-kicking superhero as well.
Well, actually, that's Carissa's character, who's my wife-to-be, who's sort of like, she's the much more fun, you know, she in a sense is the ode to the Peter Parker style Spider-Man. I am in a sense sort of like more of a Luther gone nice, right? because you know, when I was a younger man, anyways, I was a pretty big fucking dick. I mean, just take a kind of superpower like that. Take a frustrated young man who can't get laid to save his life, and you have a recipe for fucking disaster. You have a recipe for like a cantankerous fuck that dies single and alone. Luckily, I'm not in that sort of circumstance.
Well, you certainly don't seem to be, and Carissa looks like a fantastic human being. In fact, from what I see, she's a magician of sorts, some sort of stage performer.
Well, a stage performer. She has various incarnations. She just you know, fire eating is one of them. She does sideshow and that kind of stuff. She's passionate about performance. In kind of probably similar ways that it moved you for theater, you know, like just
absolutely.
For her, she describes it. I don't know if tell me if this sounds familiar. That she describes it that when she was on stage for the first time in front of a crowd, she felt safe.
Absolutely, you know, I often stand in front of groups of people, and maybe she feels this way too. Well, there are probably very few people who feel this way. I think it's a strange brokenness in a personality. I think Bono feels this way. But I often stand in front of my training crowd and we're talking about presentation skills. I might be teaching them some presentation skills. And we talk about personalities. And I tell them, I am most comfortable the bigger the crowd. You know, so give me a million people and I'm completely at home. I feel safe, just what you've said. And as the crowd shrinks, I feel less safe. Take me down to 20 people, and I'm now starting to feel quite uncomfortable. One-on-one interaction sucks. I sort of hold on to my woman as I walk through a cocktail party because having to pretend that I give a shit is really difficult. I don't like the one-on-one situation. I'm very much a crowd people person.
I'm the opposite that way. I work better in small crowds or very small crowds, only because that's sort of like the thing that naturally happens. It'd be at a party, and then to just talk about something, and then – next thing you know, a small crowd of people have formed and they're listening to every word that's coming out of your mouth. And you know, it could be for no other reason than it just sounds like a gentle buzzing and it soothes them. They may not agree with what the fuck you're saying. They're just like, just say it. Just buzz for me now because I want to hear something a little bit more pleasant.
You do have a fantastically buzzing radio voice, I have to tell you. It is a great buzz.
When I think of human beings, I can't help but think of bees. I just can't stop thinking about it because you know what? When a bee comes over to a beehive, right, and he's got all of this information that he wants to communicate with everybody, he's got himself a fat fucking flower, and he's like, this bitch is ripe for some taking. Let's do this. He's got to compete against every other bee that's out there shaking his ass, trying to make sure that they go towards his flower. But he's got to communicate, you know, the richness of his find better amongst all of that noise. Now, how they do it is still a fucking mystery. But I feel like if we uncovered the reason, we might uncover the reasons about why it works with us. Maybe it's just really simple, stupid fucking reasons. Like if you're like, if I add a little reverb to my voice, there's a 25% chance that I'm going to soothe and relax.
I believe the bees have a dance as well. Maybe you just need to learn to dance.
You know? Right. Well, I have been trying to do the other side, you know, engage in the real world a little bit more. I'm just so used to kind of like my cocooning shell where I just work on my own stuff that I forget that, you know, I need to be part of the greater world. It's just, I'm hesitant to it. I hate doing anything new for the first time because I always suck at it and I hate sucking. I hate it so much.
I think you'd love Brian. you'll have to get Brian on your show as well. He's the you to me, right? He's far more inclined to kind of stay behind his four walls and sit on his computer 24 hours a day, you know, and really powerfully interact with the world from that position.
Yeah, that is where I find myself. Just because, you know, it's great when you can just turn it off and be no one again. I think that's what I like. You can't turn that off. If you do it, the people around you probably, I bet you walk somewhere, you're probably saying a lot of hellos. Do you say a lot of hellos to people?
Yeah. No, that's very much the situation, yeah.
You can't fucking go anywhere and be like nobody.
Yeah, and I don't want to be either, which just feeds back into the loop, you know.
I guess here's the thing though. I mean, as much as my superpower isolates me, your superpower can put you in a position where you're filled with nothing but sycophants, right?
Yeah, can.
How do you prevent that?
Well, you try and be authentic and deal with truth. But at the same time, there's no doubt that an extra... I mean, we're talking about simple personality traits now. A super extrovert, a very highly extroverted person like myself, that buzz you're talking about, we create that buzz in other ways. You know, we create that buzz with force of energy. You know, it's you walk into a room and you're a force of nature and everybody just eats that energy and works off that energy and loves that energy. And if you walk out the room, the energy sort of goes with you. It's very hard to turn it off. And when you do, when you sort of go in and become part of the crowd, which I hate doing, it's kind of scary. You're sort of standing there feeling vulnerable. You feel like a human being where you normally feel like a superhero. You know?
You remind me, actually, the comic book character that I would describe you as is actually Wonder Man. Are you familiar with Wonder Man?
Wonder Man from the Marvel Universe.
From the Marvel Universe, yeah. Are you familiar with him?
I do know Wonder Man, yes.
Okay, so for those of you that aren't familiar with him, Wonder Man is, his superpower is that he needs confidence, and that confidence fills him with strength. So if he's feeling down, and here's the funny thing about Wonder Man, is if you ever read his comic books, he's a head case. I'm not saying that you are the personality version of it. I'm just saying that the superpowers are kind of similar, right? Where you have, like, you know, you need to make sure that there is that... I don't want to say adoration, but, you know, I'm going to use that because it's the most easy word to use.
Yeah, and I'm not offended by it. I'm well aware of that trait. And like you're saying, you know, about your own personality, it comes with a certain thing, you know. Yours comes with the ability to, and not just the ability, but with the tendency to critique or find negativity in things, which obviously has its downside. Obviously, you must piss people off regularly.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. It's so frequent, it's disturbing. Well, although, you know what, here's the great thing about it, though, is that in a sense, like the same thing that you do, the way that you feed off other people, I'm immune to your power.
Yes. Yes, people like you are, and I piss people like you off as well.
Well, here's the thing. The people like me, though, the flip side of it, and this is the undoing of many of the people like me, is that they grow jealous of the attention that people like you get, because in a sense they always feel like, you know, for me, you know, my type of personality is a person who works behind the scenes, who's very much more of an organizer and things like that. But part of that is always like the adulation, the thing that the other one feeds off of, you can't have. Because in a strange sense, many of these powers, they're not compatible with one another. You know, like you can't be self-critical and have a lot of influence and friends. This is not something that's just going to happen. But it's interesting to note that even in ourselves, like we could, I don't know if we can sum up our personalities and just basically say this cut and paste, but I feel like that sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
One of the shows that I wanted to do, and I'm still looking for someone that's going to be enough of an expert, there's a significant portion of my fan base that's pretty young. And what the one thing that surprises me is just the level of comprehension that happens. You know, I'm a 32-year-old man trying to talk about things that are going on in my mind and I'm trying to be smart, right? I'm trying to look good, to look knowledgeable. And meanwhile, they're just eating it up and they're 16. And I'm like, by the time they're 32, I'm going to look like a motherfucking dumbass. Why am I feeding them all this information? Right? They're only going to be better than me. I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't think I have a problem with that. I have a genuine desire to see people fucking get out of stupidity. Honestly, maybe it's because of, although, I mean, I can't say Americans are any better, but not that you're in America, but you're close enough. But, you know, I look at the South African population and I go, oh, God, if I could just teach 24 hours a day and get the whole population in front of me, I'd be happy. Honestly,
Yeah, but you know what I would do. You know what I would do in your situation? Here's what I would do. You know how like all these other atheist organizations, they spend their money trying to get billboards up, and they're like, then they figure to themselves, this is a good idea. I'm like, this, while it's a fine idea, you're using a very outmodeled form of communication. Here's what you do for half the price, not even half the price, a quarter of the price, you can give a whole city free internet. And that's all you do. You don't even need to tell them, go and research this or that. No, don't even fucking bother. Just give everyone the internet. It'll do it for them. And while like there is a section of people that will go on the internet and it'll only reinforce what it is they believe, trust me, those groups are going to be marginalized because as time goes on, people get better at filtering through the noise. And as long as your shit is solid, you're not noise. You're real information. Yeah. And that's all we have absolutely. To offer people. And I'm like, you know how much that would cost? It'd be easy to fucking set up. The information's already out there. And I think as an atheist groups, stuff like that, I'm like, look, just offer something that's invisible but still exists rather than everybody else who offers something that is invisible and doesn't. And it would be not harder.
I think it's great. What you're doing there is taking the whole population and pushing them into the front door of the public library. That's what you're doing.
Yeah, pretty much. This is the Library of Alexandria in your fucking pocket. Read a few books and shit.
Exactly. you know, I have a bit of a dream to get people reading. Now, reading is a big issue. Less so that side of the world. I mean, I'm in Africa. Reading is a big motherfucking issue. And
they got different problems, different pressures.
Yes. And, you know, I have this kind of vision for taking a container, just one of those big old containers, those trucking containers, you know, those shipping containers, and filling it with a billion comics, Batman, Superman, whatever, and just dropping container loads of comics in the middle of Africa, just getting children in the middle of Africa, just in villages and cities everywhere to start reading. And what better way than to start with a Batman comic, you know?
Right. Well, there was one other thing I would add to that, though. I would add a shitload of pencils and some blank pieces of paper.
Lovely.
Because, you know, I think about, I don't know if you've ever, did you ever watch the documentary, The Secret History, Origins of DC?
I think I've read that. When you say watched, was there a documentary?
There's a documentary about it. It's actually narrated by Ryan Reynolds, who's like the worst superhero movie. But anyways.
We'll fight about that one. I thought he was brilliant as Green Lantern.
Anyways, that's a different conversation for a different show. But here's the one thing that I felt was the message, why I agree with you with the comic books, and what I felt was the message about things like Superman, is that Superman came from a place where the writer, his father was killed. An injustice was done. Like the comic book hero mythos, he lived that fucking mythos. And Superman is a reflection of the feeling of injustice. Now, when that feel of injustice is given a new fucking dimension, a dimension of hope, not one that you have to believe in, but one that you can just live up to or at least admire, it goes a fucking long way, I feel, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely it does.
I mean, the power of comic books, I mean, we just laugh at it. People are still laughing at it as a medium. I'm like, I don't think you understand its power.
No, not at all. I agreed. And with digital comics now, of course, I mean, most of my collection is on the iPad. It's just so easily accessible. And of course, the graphics are so absolutely beautiful, and the way you navigate through these things is just so incredible. I just feel more and more people just need to sort of come into this world of superheroes. But I think it's happening. I'm not convinced that it's not. I think between like the Comic-Con that happens in, where is it, San Diego or
yeah,
wherever
that's
it is, and all the superhero movies that have come out. I mean, The Avengers was absolutely fantastic. I think we'll see, I'm certainly seeing on this side of the world more youngsters getting involved, because for a while I thought it was just my generation that read comics. You had to be between kind of 32 and 42, and then you, if you were in that generation, you were the comic collectors, and you'd be still reading comics at age 90 because that was the generation. But it looks like the new generation is bitten as well, and that excites me. That's awesome. I think comics have a lot to share with the world.
I'm kind of curious about what you would suggest to other people, other personality types that might be similar to yours. I mean, you've been working with the Clergy Project, for instance, but I mean, keep in mind that there's tons of people. I mean, even Jerry was at the time just a listener of the show and just needing to hear the right thing, to empathize with the right strategy. And the tons of people that are like that, wondering what they should do with it. Where do you think they should start? How do they begin?
Okay, I have to make a base assumption here that they're, for instance, listening to the show.
Assumption number one. Yeah, that's a good assumption. Let's start with that assumption.
If they're listening to the show, then a great place to start beyond listening to the show is to get on the internet and find out who the hell lives nearby you that's talking about the same stuff, you know. Just get out and discover the humans around you. And you don't need a lot of humans, you know. We started with like three other humans that we found from nothing. Like we knew no non-Christian people when I became an atheist. And we kind of just put our feelers out on the internet and found, you know, somewhere down there in Joburg and there and there and there. And then you have to be the kind of person who's willing to get up, get out of your house, into your car, and actually drive there. You actually have to meet people. You have to go and look at them and have coffee with them and start to build relationships. And it doesn't take long before a small community starts. And people want to meet. People want to gather. So if you can find the excuse, whether it's a beer at a pub or a coffee at a coffee shop or a movie club where, you know, I even do that now. So we've got a group of us that attend every movie in costume. You know, we dress up for the movie. And just find people who want to do something, they want to meet, give them an excuse to meet and start. And if it's four of you for 6 months, it's really not a problem. Just meet. And before long, it becomes six and it becomes eight and things start to happen. And you realize that the community is, in fact, out there. And if you're not the kind of person who thinks you can do that, if you're not the kind of person who can gather people and organize and that type of thing, and we're not all that kind of person, are we? There are other people that are like that, and they are already doing that. So go and find a group, you know. I mean, atheists, I hate the idea that atheists are like cats and you can't herd them. They are, but I hate the idea that they are. And I'm not convinced that they all are.
And plus, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, right?
Precisely. Don't be the fucking cat. That's my advice to you. Don't be the cat. Be the Labrador. And go and fucking get stroked by someone. You know, go and find a group of people.
You're a social animal. Don't imitate cats. You know what cats do? They generally act like dicks. They poop on everything, and they mess up your plants, and then they feel superior. Does that sound like anybody who's listening to the show right now?
Probably half your audience, yeah.
Jeez, that sounded like me there. Oh, I shit on everything. That's what I do. I'm a fucking cat. Boo.
So, you know, my new family are the cats of the world. And sometimes I have to pull them by the tail, pull them in screaming and wailing and fucking clawing. And, you know, but once they get together and we start to huddle and we start to realize, oh, it's fucking nice to just be with humans and it's fun. Well, geez, like your life changes, you know? You don't. The only person to blame for being alone is yourself. There is enough of an atheist, skeptic, agnostic, free-thinking community in the world for you to find a group nearby. There is. There really is.
And you know, there's only one problem, one kink in this whole plan if they do this. Do you know what that kink is? I just don't think they're going to be listening to my show as much. They're going to get over me. That's what I fear.
No, come on.
It must happen. Look, I think it happened to me too. There was just a time where I'm like, this sounds samey. I'm done with you. And at one point, you just are like, you've all grown up now. You're off to college. Daddy's proud, but off you go. And I'm like, well, I hope the attrition's not too big. You guys got to stay for a little while.
Yeah, well, look, I'm staying. You know, I might not download every single podcast because I'm trying to listen to 12 audiobooks in any given month or whatever it is. But
you're not a hardcore. That's understood. That's fine.
Yeah, I'm not a hardcore. But let me tell you, it's exactly in that kind of group where we sit around and we say, hey, did any of you listen to Jacob this week? And he was talking about, you know, fucking this or that. And then inevitably four or five other people have listened to the show. Believe it or not, South Africans are listening to your show.
So I don't actually believe that conversation's really ever happened in a real
time. I promise you it has. Promise you it has. And we talk about some of the other guys, you know, Chariots of Iron and Skeptics Guide and all the other guys that are, and we just love them all. And we download the shit and sometimes it's just shit and guys are just ranting and about something. I you're pretty good at that, and we'll just jump on the rant bandwagon with you. We'll say, oh well, he wasn't, you know, he was in a bad mood today, and we'll just have a big chat about it. But we're all together and we're drinking beer and we're chatting and we're talking about you, and it's all awesome.
Well, you know what you can do one day then for me, like a big favor. Here's what you can do for me. I would love this. I am I think it's going to be in 3 months, I'm going to be at the millionth download of the show. And that's with me sort of like being very conservative about a shitload of years that, you know, the downloads weren't working well and it wasn't tracked. And I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm not even going to count that shit. New count. I'm waiting till it's now sort of like a million because it's got a visual thing, right? And the countdowns get really fucking close. But the whole thing I figured is, all right, how many laughs on average can I get a tiny chuckle out of someone? Maybe two chuckles per show, if I'm being like really harsh. That means 2 million laughs that I've never heard. That's,
yeah.
I would like one day to sort of, you know, be in your shoes, to hear the laughter. I would love that in a crowd or group. I just can't actually organize that. If I did, or as I have tried in the past, their utter failure has only been all the more depressing. And I'm like, I don't want to do that again. It's too hard on one's ego where you're just like, oh, I can't go through that no more. That's it. I'm done.
I promise you we will do that for you. We will do that for you. Jacob, the South African, I don't even know what we call ourselves anymore. There's just so many names. But the South African sort of semi-atheist, the Butterfly Group, there we go. The Butterfly Group will send you a little recording, a little something, a little MP3 with some giggles, some chuckles for Jacob Fortin.
Can I ask you a question? Because this is a sort of like, as a person who listens to it, we'll say regularly enough, and I'm working on the bonus DVD thing, is the intro music just annoying everyone now? Should I make a new one? I don't even know, like, because I've heard it so many times now that, again, I'm sick of it, but I don't know if I should be the one making that decision. Like, there's a couple key decisions where I'm like, I don't think you guys want me making those decisions because that'd be brutal.
My only critique with their music would be that you can't hear the word good in Good Atheist because the lightning bolt covers it up.
Right. Right.
But otherwise, I don't think it's a thing you get annoyed with. Well, I certainly don't. It's just the mark. It's just the logo. It's just who you are. So when you hear it, you know what you're about to listen to. You know, like what it sounds like is almost irrelevant. I mean, I know you did that little thing with a few of your shows where you had a doop 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 doop.
Yeah, and everybody said that was the worst.
And that really was the worst. I was very relieved when you went back to the good atheist.
But you know what it is? Do you know what it is? My theory is that, okay, the little song was fine, and had I begun that song, but everybody hates change. That's the problem. You know, it reminds me of, there was this another site that me and Ryan did called Fightlinker, and I did a logo for it that's like a jackal, because the whole time, that's what we used to call people. Who went on the site, because everybody was a big ass jerk on that site. But that was the whole shtick, right? So you call him Jackal. I drew Jackal. That was the logo. But, you know, I was always bothered by how crappy looking it was. And then I spent time making the logo that I actually wanted to make originally, which looked more like a sports logo. And I thought, this is a sexy ass logo. Everybody hated it. And another harsh lesson is like, you know what? Once you put that thing out there and people identify with it, you can't change it even if you hate it. That sucks. Lesson one of the internet. Don't change a thing even if you hate it. Damn it.
Well, I can tell you that as a new listener, my feel is, if you were a new listener and you'd never heard The Good Atheist before, and the first time you heard The Good Atheist, you heard dooby dooby doob doob dooby doob, that thing.
Yeah.
You'd be like, whatever, let's see what this guy has to say. But the first time, if you listening to Good Atheist for the first time and you hear that The Good Atheist with that horror music going on in the background, that makes an impact. You're like, oh my God, what's this all about? And you sort of come closer to the speaker and you want to know what this guy has to say. That is interesting. It's unique. That's why I went for that that operatic sound at the beginning of my podcast, because it just has this dramatic, you know, well, maybe these guys have something dramatic to say.
why did you have to convince me to keep it? Damn it. I was hoping that, you know, I was right at that point. I'm like, look, I'm ready to jump ship with that fucking intro. If I hear it one more time, I'm going to kill somebody. But yeah, and I'm the same dude who has to sell this thing when it's done and be like, I can't stand it. Who wants it?
Well, I mean, can't you just mix it up, like with the same theme, that's the hope. 60s horror theme or whatever it is?
That's the hope. Plus, I'm going to fix the stupid grammatical mistake in there that has been bugging me, and maybe that's kind of a joke thing. But you're right. I it's the signature. I can't change it, even despite the fact that I totally want to change it. And you know what that song is? It's a reminder of something that I wasn't able to do. The original design, I wanted to make it look like one of those 1930s horror things, like, you know, Beware the Atheist, but I couldn't actually pull it off. So I had a whole theme, but I'm like, not talented enough. And the internet was no help. I couldn't rip it off. No help there. Be like, I can't be that creative. Just not possible. it's a reminder of my failure. That's why I had it.
It's fantastic. I wouldn't change it. I think it's great.
All right. I'll keep it. You know what? Everybody has you to thank for it. And that means that probably now, from this newfound curiosity, and definitely, like, you're an interesting dude. I'm sure lots of people are like, all right, I want to listen to his podcast now. So we're going to have a link for that on in the notes, also on the show. But give everybody what the podcast address is right now.
It is primordial-soup.org. Primordial-soup.org.
And if they go there, they can check out. There's we said 28 podcasts, so you got
28. Hopefully, by the time they get there, it'll be 31.
Don't, you know what? Lesson number one of the early parts of podcasting: promise no shows because you're just a big liar.
Okay. 28 podcasts. We'll under promise and over deliver. How about that?
Yeah, it's more fine. Just don't commit to something that you know you're always going to disappoint them to, because, you know, at the early part, it is really, it's just tough. It's just tough putting it, like you said before, putting together podcasts is hard work. It takes a while to kind of like just get into the mix of it and just for it to be like, oh, I can handle doing the podcast on a regular basis. But you guys, I'm sure you're going to get there. And besides, after the show's done, maybe I can give you guys a few pointers, pretend to know that I know what I'm talking about.
Lovely. Would appreciate that.
Well, Dion, thanks for coming on the show. And everybody should go check out your stuff And if you feel inspired, if you think you're one of those personalities that can either inspire other people or create groups, there's lots of fans that have already started this, and I encourage them all along the way. Do it, guys. And if you're not one of those people, work with people that are, like we said before. I think that was at the end of the day, the lesson of the show. Yay, the lesson roundup. Yay.
That's like He-Man when he ends his adventure and gives the lesson, the moral lesson.
Oh, God, yeah. I got to totally do that with a more you know thing. See, more promises of things I can't do. It's not going to happen. Dion, thanks for coming on the show.
Pleasure. Thank you.